Welcome to Policy and Politics with Dave Crooks. When Republican Larry Bouchon announced he would not seek an eighth term as the United States representative in Indiana's 8th district, the open seat attracted a lot of tension in Indiana political circles. 8 Republicans and 4 Democrats have now filed. First of all, on the Republican side, the candidates include Jim Just In Case, Jeremy L. Heath, former Congressman John N. Hostetler, Dominique Jack Kavanaugh, Mark Mesmer, Luke A. Meisner, Richard Moss, and Christy Risk. Those are the 8 that stayed on the ballot as the deadline came this week, and those are the Republican candidates running for Congress in Indiana's 8th district. On the Democratic side, there is Eric Hurt, Peter F. H. Priest II, Edward Upton Sine, and Michael Tolarczyk. And I hope I pronounced that right, but I'm sure I butchered that. So I guess I'll get that corrected eventually. But in the studio today, one of the candidates is with us on the Democratic side, and that would be Ed Sine, who he and I have become friends in the last several weeks. And for full disclosure, as my official position with the Indiana Democratic Party's 8th District Chairman. In my personal role, I have endorsed Ed already, and I've agreed to be his campaign chair, and I found out it doesn't pay a damn thing, but I'm going to help him anyway. So, Ed, welcome to the show on Policy and Politics. So,
thank you very much, Dave. I really appreciate the opportunity to be here with you.
Well, I tell you what, I planned on having you on the show sooner than later, but I appreciate you coming up on short notice as we record this on Friday afternoon, because I was planning on doing a state legislative update this week, but it just didn't work out, and I've had a lot going on, as you probably know. But anyway, let's talk about Ed Sine of Boonville. You decided to run for this. Tell us how it happened, I guess.
Well, I had been approached by the local Democratic Party chair, and basically there was a campaign to solicit people to run, or if you knew anybody.
So the texting program, I think I touched on that a few weeks ago on this program.
That's right. That's right. And I agreed to have a meeting, and one meeting led to another, and I was asked, and I thought it over and agreed to do so.
So before you know it, you're running for Congress. So tell people what you've done like in your profession.
Well, my background is in retail management. I sell things. I'm a guitar salesman specifically.
Okay.
So that has put me in contact with a wide, wide range of people, because music embraces most people's lives. And it's a very diverse way to express yourself, to increase the quality of your life, bring joy into it. You know, we sing the Lord's praises in many different ways, and we often just do this to relax and better ourselves.
So were you a performer as well, or besides selling instruments?
Yes, indeed. I am a performer. I'm a musician. I've been playing guitar for 40 plus years, and I've been in the industry for 30 of those. So I have quite a bit of a background and experience in talking to a lot of different types of musicians across all kinds of genres.
Okay, so I've not got into this in the past, but I know you touched on this on maybe one of your Facebook posts or something. You were not born in Indiana's 8th District, correct?
That's correct. That's correct. I've been living here in southern Indiana for 25 years and in Boonville, Warwick County for 24 of them.
Okay.
I'm born and raised in Manhattan, New York. I'm a native New Yorker.
How did you get to Indiana from New York?
The short answer is love. I got lucky. I met a nice girl from the west side of Evansville who was following her dreams. She was a professional flight attendant for American Airlines and was based in the neighborhood that I grew up in. I happened to be in a band at the time where the guys were dating flight attendants, and I met a really nice girl from the west side of Evansville.
How about that? So you ended up falling in love, getting married, and moving to Boonville, huh?
Yep, all on purpose.
How about that? So in other words, Boonville didn't choose you. You chose Boonville, I guess.
Indeed, I did. I've been visiting the area since the mid-90s, and I had an idea of what I was getting into. And when we decided to start a family, we were going to do it where it was made the most sense to do so. Of course, New York City was a place where middle-class people that worked in the city lived in the city when I was a child. And
right.
It's very, very different now.
So talk about what really motivated you besides getting this, pitch from guys like me and other people in the Democratic Party looking for some fresh new blood. What really decided in your mind that this is something you wanted to do, knowing that this is a really tough red district?
Well, I speak to people all the time. I have a front-facing job in terms of interacting with the public. I don't meet strangers. I just meet friends that I haven't met yet. And the things that concern people, the most of us, outweigh the 1% of the issues that may potentially divide us or that we would disagree on. It's all about family, quality of life, our kids, our parents, the things that we're trying to do to just get by, if not also to succeed in this life that we share.
So let's talk about what might make you different, because one thing that we've not touched on yet, but your website.
Yes, yeah, changecongress.com.
So when we say that, or at least you say that, what do you mean by that? Because what are some of the issues that you would tackle as the next congressman if you had the chance to really represent the 8th District of Indiana?
Well, specifically, I would like to remind and just bring it back to the original intent of it being the people's house. The U.S. House of Representatives should have a cross-section of the electorate and people that serve. And term limits, I think, would be one way to really, really change the structure and the mechanisms that motivate people to run and to do the job properly.
So when you say term limits, how many terms?
Well, for congressmen, I would say in the House of Representatives, 6 terms. And in the Senate, I would go with 2.
Okay, well, so that would equal 12 on each end. What about those that say, well, we do have term limits, they're called elections?
Well, I think we can safely say that the electoral process is weighted in a direction that does not really favor people like me getting a chance to participate in electoral politics. And because of that, we have a political class that is comprised of professional politicians, and it's gotten very, very far away from the original intent of the founders, of people, citizens who serve, and then they go back to their private lives.
So with this current congressman, 14 years, we heard that he might maybe go for at least one more term. A couple of days before the filing date started, he decided he's out. I've had a lot of reporters call me and talk about it. Some asked, well, were you surprised? Actually, I wasn't, because I knew he was getting near the end of his rope. But at the same time, he had mentioned in an interview back in November that he didn't think Donald Trump would be the nominee. Well, obviously, it looks like Donald Trump is on his way to being the Republican nominee, and perhaps he thought retribution might be in his future if he stayed along. I don't know. That's my own speculation. Ed, you can think about whatever that might mean as you look at it now as a person trying to get an open seat. But what do you say to people who say, hey, this is a really, really red district. There's 8 Republicans. Some have even got political experience. You know, Mark Mesmer seems to have an advantage having funds. John Hostetler's a former congressman, so he's won. How in the world can you assure someone that a guy like you could actually be a congressman as a Democrat and being a complete unknown?
Well, in the 25 years I've been living in this part of America and in Congressional District 8, I've come to find that Hoosiers are really even-keeled people. They are pragmatists. They are more middle of the road than I think some Republicans would have you believe. Sure, we have passions on either side of many issues, but when it comes down to it, home, hearth, family, these are the things that we work for, because all of us are working to live rather than having to live to work, which is unfortunately the case for many, many people. So with that in mind, I realized that because I have a lot of experience talking with a lot of different types of people, I think that I can connect and represent the majority of people who believe that freedom for thee and not for me is something that we just can't live with. There is an exclusionary part of the discourse that is divisive, where we characterize people in the worst terms in the political sphere. And my neighbors and people, we don't talk like that where I live.
Can that be a lot? I guess, would you argue that maybe social media has had a lot to do with this? I mean, when you and I were growing up, you didn't have a phone in your hand all the time. We didn't even have those kind of phones, of course, at that age. But more importantly, if you wanted to know what was going on in your community, you would kind of talk over the backyard fence, as they would call it. You get to know your neighbor, and I don't think I remember as a kid talking politics at all. When it came to what your neighbor's politics were, you were just kind of knowing what was going on in the neighborhood, knowing what was going on with your neighbors and their kids.
Yeah, I think social media has, you know, had an impact on it. It gives people a false sense of anonymity so that they think they can say whatever they want to say without really giving thought to how it could be hurtful to someone else. But social media has been a part of our lives right now for a long time, and it's not going away. So I hope that that false sense of anonymity goes away as people become more mature and have more experience. And obviously, a lot of people are dealing with the repercussions of just speaking without thought.
And we probably should touch on what should Congress do about social media, because I know they had a hearing on that less than 2 weeks ago. But before we do, let's get back to some of the ideas you talked about earlier. Term limits. Okay, I can live with that. I can see that that makes sense. And I think that would maybe reduce the push toward fundraising, because that seems to be what's driving everything when you run for Congress. I did it, of course, and I shared my experience with you before you got into this. There's an expectation for you to constantly being on the phone or trying to find ways to raise money. And you find that even those that get elected, so much of their focus is like spent on raising money. What can we do about that, in your thoughts?
Well, from what I've been reading about the basic tenets of campaign finance reform, it exactly recognizes that issue that you're talking about. And it's one of the structural elements of Congress that has to be changed in order for people to actually do the job of the people. Congressional representatives have a limited amount of time. I mean, the calendar is not 365, 12 months out of the year.
Oh, no.
Right.
It's about 40 weeks a year. And typically they arrive on a Monday afternoon and they try to get out of town by Thursday afternoon. So tighten that, you know, 5 day week to really like three and a half days. And then they're spending probably a third of that time raising money. I mean, we've got a Congress spending maybe 2 weeks or 2 days a week in town, 40 weeks a year. And that's probably the time that they actually do legislating. And I know when I watch C-SPAN, and I've complained about this before, where are all the members around those horseshoe committee rooms? I mean, you've got a chairman sitting there and a ranking minority member and staff. And it's like all these empty chairs. And I'm told even when I ran, and I keep hearing this now, well, they're at other meetings. Well, yeah, they're out fundraising. I mean, they're doing things that keep them away from committee and building a consensus and getting productive things done. And I think that's one of the reasons why Congress is broken. But you and I are going to be preaching to the choir when it comes to changing Congress, because I know we think alike on this issue.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We're talking about the lack of accountability that is supported by the current financial incentives to get into office and to stay in office once you're there.
Or what was your take, let's say, recently? And by the way, it's a fact. This most recent Congress, the current Congress, is probably the least productive we've had in modern history. Very few things are passing. Here, the president has had a weak spot when it came to making some more humane changes after the Trump administration, and people don't really understand all the executive orders that were adjusted or even rescinded. But part of it was to try to keep from separating families, was my understanding, let alone trying to have a more humane way of dealing with it. But nevertheless, the numbers keep increasing, and it looked like Senator Lankford and others, Senator Sinema, who's now an independent out of Arizona, they came to an arrangement to where, look, we've got a real piece of legislation moving that would finally put some dollars that are targeted toward security, let alone enforcement. But more importantly, shut things off when they need to shut the border off and make it a lot more inclusive, and kind of gave a lot of concessions away to the Republicans that even the progressives and the Democrat side weren't that thrilled about. But they were almost at the finish line, and the way it apparently is being reported, Donald Trump did not want them to get to the finish line, and he pretty much had the Republicans say no at the last minute. Is that your take on it?
Yeah, absolutely. We're talking about a piece of legislation that was endorsed by the U.S. Chamber of Commerce, the Wall Street Journal, as well as the U.S. Border Patrol.
And we can't somehow pass that.
Yeah, well, it's been politicized. It's an issue that Donald Trump is intending to run on.
Well, and both the president and the former president were at the border this week, I think as recently as Thursday afternoon, and trying to bring attention. And I noticed that from the highlights of the speeches that I've seen from both men, obviously the current president being more inclusive and trying to find a way to even join President Trump if he wants to, and just do it, where obviously Trump had kind of strange nicknames and was just kind of attacking President Biden. So, I mean, I guess that's just kind of the Trump way, but old way. Oh, well, but here we are. We're not solving it, but there's plenty of ads out there bashing, you know, the Biden border issue. Can Congress fix anything in your mind these days, Ed? I mean, let's say you get lucky and you win this congressional race. I mean, do you feel like you can make a difference as one congressman out of 435?
Yes, I do. And part of it is just modeling proper behavior. The conciliatory tone that President Biden used is exactly what we need to have in order to change Congress. The incentives are not only financial that we talked about earlier, but also because of media sound bites and the manufactured outrage. This is something that plays to a very specific part of the electorate, and legislators are engaging in this behavior at the expense of any kind of comity or attempts to work together to do the work of the people.
So obviously, let's talk about some of the issues before we run out of time here. So you've touched on term limits. Obviously, if they're not focused on fundraising so much, I would hope they would be in committee more. I mean, that would make a difference, because I know when I served in the state legislature, that's where the heavy lifting took place. You became kind of an expert in certain type of issues. I mean, I chaired insurance for a term. I chaired utilities in my last term, but I'd served on utilities for most of my 12 years in the legislature. So you try to perfect a few issues that you care about and know a little bit about. And you want those people on those committees to not only vent the issues in committee and give it a fair hearing, but when you're a member out on the floor and you're finally pushing a lot of bills through the process to meet deadlines, you want to rely on that committee vote and who voted however to see, you know, why it came out the way it did. But I'm fearful these days when I see nobody in committee at the federal level. How does anybody know what's in these bills, especially at the federal level, if they're not even crafting them and creating that consensus that you and guys like me would like to see happen in our Congress?
Yeah, we're talking about lack of accountability, and that's the reason why they can get away with not participating. But also, I think the culture, again, it comes down to myself. If I had the honor and privilege of representing the people of Congressional District 8, I would make it a special point to engage with the legislators that are on the opposite side of the aisle from me, because those who didn't vote for me, they're my constituents too.
Absolutely. Now, let's touch on a couple of things. And one, I want to make a correction. When I referred to you on this show a couple of productions ago, I think I made an incorrect comment about your wife's healthcare situation. I think I said she had cancer, and that was incorrect. So would you mind touching on that and not only diving into your thoughts on healthcare, because you've had your own personal challenges with this, with your wife's own healthcare incident, correct?
Certainly, certainly. Of course, very, very thankful that the cancer has not touched my family as it has with so many other Americans. But like many, many Americans, we're all one stroke of bad luck of that make life-changing plans that affect your ability to contribute, to feel good. And that is a issue that like many American families, mine has had to deal with. And it had derailed some plans in terms of career for my wife, and has put us under some significant financial hardship. But these are challenges that are shared by so many people, because healthcare is a privilege for too many.
Yeah, and it's not cheap. Obviously, if you get sick or have an injury, wow, you can rack up $1 million bill before you know it.
That's right. That's right.
Obviously, the Affordable Care Act and the exchanges that allow people to buy healthcare and even get subsidies if their income is low, I assume you want to see that remain?
Absolutely, because it's worked for us, and it is now working for more American families since its inception.
Yeah, I know a lot of people that would not have, they'd be caught, they call naked in the market. They would have no coverage whatsoever And that's not good. I mean, that's not healthy for Americans to be with no coverage.
No, for a large part of my adult life, I have not had any health care. So by the grace of God, go I, right?
Yeah, there you go. And we all want good health care, let alone good health. But sometimes we get lucky and sometimes we don't, unfortunately. We got just a couple of minutes left, Ed. But again, we're talking with Ed Sein. He's one of the candidates running for the open seat for Larry Bouchon's congressional seat. He has a website, changecongress.com. We touched on the fact that you're looking for some institutional changes. And that's my understanding. It would be really a constitutional change if you actually did term limits, too. Is that right? Is that your understanding?
Yes.
And you want to kind of make a change in fundraising to where there's not so much focus on that, change the tone. Where do you stand on all this push lately, especially after the last administration got three Supreme Court justices through and then bam, Roe versus Wade is tossed out after a 50 plus year tradition of access for women's health care, and some of the states have really taken their state laws in a direction that's making it difficult for women who might need an abortion for even health reasons, let alone for their own personal planned, pregnancies. Where do you stand on that issue?
Women's reproductive health care choices are their business and their business alone. But really what I think we're talking about is a form of gender justice or injustice in this case. And if you don't want to have an abortion, don't get one.
That's basically it for you then, huh? But leave it between a doctor and the patient.
Absolutely.
All right. And then how about guns? People are pretty big in the 8th District about, it even looks like the NRA, I think, from all the ads I'm seeing on Mark Mesmer right now, it looks like that pack, if I'm reading it correctly, is an NRA pack. It looks like they're already going to pick a player in that one. But the bottom line, where do you stand on the Second Amendment? A lot of people around here are hunting enthusiasts. And of course, Indiana's an open carry state. Where do you stand overall on guns, Ed?
Well, I'm not interested in taking away anybody's guns. Gun ownership is a bell that cannot be unrung. The toothpaste is not going to go back in that tube. I would like to see Second Amendment supporters and gun enthusiasts continue, or even if they can come up with ways to better model proper behavior in terms of carrying and storing their personal weapons. But I got plenty of people in my life that love to hunt, trap, and fish. I live in Warwick County, where we're well-armed, and there's nothing that, in my estimation or desire, is to take guns away from people.
So whether it's a hunting or personal protection, you're okay with guns. You have no issue there.
Well, I think everybody has an issue. I mean, we live in a time and a place right now where, unfortunately, exposure and experience with gun violence for too many communities is not a matter of if, but when. My wife is a substitute teacher. She works in the school systems. All right. Anybody that has a kid in school has to have in the back of their mind the fact that every community that has been touched by gun violence, and that our kids are engaging in shooter drills, that's something every one of those communities didn't think it would happen to them.
Yeah, well, I don't know how you solve it. There's a lot of ARs that are already out there, and I'm not sure that some people should even have the right to have something like so significant, let alone there's just some people getting access that maybe if we did a deep down review on them, maybe they wouldn't actually deserve that gun, because we see all these mental health concerns coming out of some of these situations, and you wonder how we didn't catch that.
Yeah, well, you know, the NRA was originally a sportsman's organization, but since it has really become a lobbying gun effort, an arm of the gun industry, of course, I'm in sales. I know what makes the world go around.
Well, and there's no question. There's a lot of gun sales going on around here and across the country. Ed Sein, I'll give you about 30 more seconds to kind of sum it up, and if you want to pitch your website. But the bottom line, Democratic candidate for Congress in the 8th District. If people are Democrats in the primary, why should they vote for you?
Well, I'm a regular guy. I'm a person who works for a living, and one of my qualifications, but obviously besides what the Constitution says, that I'm of legal age and I'm a resident, is that I have made it my point my entire adult life to know the issues of the day and to be able to speak to them, because that's how I express my patriotism. Watching the news, especially when you do so by not wanting to be in an echo chamber and to listen to diversity of viewpoints, it's hard. It's work. My wife calls it my homework. And my qualification is such because I've made it my point, I know that freedom is not free. The price of it is to be an informed citizen. And, you know, of course, I think I would wish that some of my fellow citizens would kind of take that attitude and, you know, engage in the work of being a good citizen. So that's why I do feel qualified in terms of knowing what's going on and having a moral compass and a sense of duty. I love America. This is I've done some traveling and I have a basis for comparison. We are, in my opinion, the greatest country in the world.
Ed Sein from Boonville, Indiana. He's a Democrat candidate for U.S. Congress, the seat that Larry Bouchon is vacating. There's a total of 8 Republicans that have filed so far and a total of 4 Democrats. And Ed, thanks so much for making the long road trip up from Boonville today to be on the program this week. And you have a great day.
Thank you, David. Thank you for the opportunity.
Policy and Politics with Dave Crooks is a production of the DLC Media News Department. Downloads of this program and past shows are available at any one of our DLC Media radio station websites. Follow me on X or on Facebook to learn who is appearing next week, as well as the times and list of all radio stations where you can hear the show first. Have a great weekend, and thanks for listening.